when you're just starting, you have to get really specific a lot of times about what improvement looks like, because it's not always going to immediately be reflected in your bottom line. It's not always going to immediately be reflected in, well, I sold 2x what I did last month, and hopefully I can 2x that again and just continue doing that for forever. So, yeah. Although we would love that up into the right trajectory. So I had to get really specific as I was working on even my own work about what is improvement and how in the world would I know if I did it? And then if I wanted to get better, A, what was better? And then B was, if I really wanted to get better, what would be the absolutely baseline essential components to know that I had the material to improve?
Welcome to the Real Better Life podcast, where people that are writing stories worth telling share their knowledge, wisdom, and perspective to help you go further, faster as you move to your better life. Over to your hosts, Dave Ness and Rob Alkema.
Hey, everybody. Dave Ness here with Rob Alkema.
Hello.
For another episode of the Real Better Life podcast. Tonight, we've got an amazing guest, somebody who has been involved with our company, Thrive Real Estate Group, for a lot of years. I can't remember exactly what year we began to engage together, but
1989. I was five.
It gets older and older the more whiskey we drink. But Landon Lynch is with us tonight as our guest. And just a couple words about Landon. He has his fingerprints on Thrive in a big way, our company, Thrive Real Estate Group, dating back to when we originally penned and etched into some tablets our mission, vision, and values. And there were extremely late night phone calls, text messages, brainstorms, a lot of breakfasts, a lot of coffees, a lot of exploration and refinement to arrive at our mission, vision, and values. And it's not so much just that we created mission, vision, and values, but it's that those mission and vision and values have become our signpost and our guidepost, both for the time from then until now, and then, of course, into the future. So they've had a profound impact and a tremendous influence on who we've become and who we are as a company, as an organization, as a family, the leadership at Thrive all the way down, and all the advisors and the operations team and everybody. And so we've really grown to love our mission, vision, values, and Landon had a huge hand in that. And then he also engaged with us over the past roughly half decade, just in various forms through a consultation with me and as a leader, and then also with our mentors and launching the mentor program as it's known today, as well as just coming in and giving us amazing tools to help us understand one another throughout our entire organization, which at the time right now is about 55 people. And so huge welcome to you, Landon. Thanks for being here. Thanks for spending some time with us. And it's just one more touch point, one more engagement of you and the Thrive family, which I'm sure will continue to go on into the future.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. I always look forward to spending time with you guys. And obviously, I'm so deeply connected to Thrive for so many years. So I mean, it's just a pleasure. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for the people that are listening that know you, they're probably laughing and smiling right now going, oh my gosh, it's Landon. And for those who don't, at some point, you'll probably cross paths and you'll be better for it. Landon's got a lot of wisdom and a lot of experience just with team building, business building, asking deep questions, exploring deep motivations, why people do what they do, and how to get more out of life and how to live larger and go after what you really want. And so that's really what we're going to be exploring tonight together, is a couple different topics. The first one is just continual improvement in the process of continual improvement. And the way that we have kind of penned that and described that at Thrive is the RISE program, which stands for Relentlessly in Search of Excellence. And so it's a fancy way of saying, yeah, continual improvement. So maybe we start there.
Let's do it. Landon, you not only have helped us go through this process, but we wanted to unpack this process for all of the listeners. You have this really simple framework, a four-step framework for this process of continuous improvement in anything, business, personal, family, whatever. And so why don't we start there? Can you unpack this for us? When did you first learn about this? How has this helped you? How did this evolve over time?
When it comes to that four-step framework and kind of how I came about it, most of the things I've come about are kind of through trial and error almost. And I think one of the things that happened was as I was kind of ramping up a business, I had to get really clear for myself because it was just me on how am I going to determine whether or not I improved? Was this month better than the last month? Was this quarter better than the last quarter? By what metrics, right? And when you're just starting, I think like a lot of your advisors too, when you're just starting, you have to get really specific a lot of times about what improvement looks like, because it's not always going to immediately be reflected in your bottom line. It's not always going to immediately be reflected in, well, I sold 2x what I did last month, and hopefully I can 2x that again and just continue doing that for forever. So, yeah. Although we would love that up into the right trajectory. So I had to get really specific as I was working on even my own work about what is improvement and how in the world would I know if I did it? And then if I wanted to get better, A, what was better? And then B was, if I really wanted to get better, what would be the absolutely baseline essential components to know that I had the material to improve? And without that, there was going to be something absolutely essential to improvement that I wasn't going to have, and therefore I would undermine my own improvement. Or I might improve accidentally, but anything that we do accidentally, it might feel good for a moment, but it's not repeatable because I didn't do it on purpose. So whatever I was going to do, I just wanted to make sure I was doing it intentionally on purpose. So it, like, if you hang around me and the people I work with a lot, you hear the word intentional a lot. And the reason is because when I'm intentional, I can learn. When I'm intentional, I can improve and then repeat the process. And so for me, it kind of started with, all right, like, where would improvement have to start? Well, it would first have to start with, I want something. What is it? How do I get clear about that? And then backward, and basically the very first part of that is, I got to have a plan. And so I started asking, what would effective planning look like? And then the plan would have some component of, I have to figure out, what am I going to go do to execute the plan? Now I have to go plan. The plan has to be good. So I've got to define what a good plan is. And then I got to do that. And then I've got to execute, because we all know people who have unbelievable plans, but they suck at execution, right? the thing falls apart and they're like, well, I guess my plan wasn't good. And I'm like, no, you didn't follow through. So let's just be honest about that. And you've got to go execute. But then a lot of people, they might even plan and execute, but then they don't analyze. And so that was the third step. So after action review, becoming normal, what worked? What didn't work? What did I learn from this? What do I need to do in response to this? Having a process around analyzing and then doing something about it. And the doing something about it is what I call iterate, right? So it's iteration. So translating what I learned into version 2.0. So plan, execute, analyze, and iterate becomes this cycle, and not a cycle I do once so I can be done with it, but this cycle that I just embrace as almost a lifestyle. If I want to improve, this just becomes my lifestyle.
Mm. That's so good.
We could end here.
Right. And we're done. Shortest episode.
So good.
So you talked about, and I might have missed this if you said it, but you talked about, like, you have a process for coming up with a good plan. You have a process for analyzing, right? The after action review. Iterating is essentially going back and just making adjustments to the original plan, coming up with a better plan next time around. Do you have a process for execution? That seems like a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Yeah, I think it's a good, it's a great question.
No, it is a good question. And honestly, my process for execution for me, this is like, we're getting next level nerdy. So if you're intimidated by the nerdiness that is about to hit, feel free to skip this part until you realize, oh, I need that level of nerdiness, and then come back to it. So for me, I mean, I literally have in front of me, I just grabbed it because it sits on my desk right now. I have a laminated front and back page that says daily routine checklist. And I have my motivations listed at the top. And just like, because there's no reason I want to do this every morning. So I have to remind myself why the heck I want this. So this is a precursor for me to perform at a high level. I want to have automated systems that will help me live out my values. At the beginning of 2024, there were a number of things that kind of happened life business-wise that I felt my energy and my focus and my motivation was slipping. And so I want to use slippage as an opportunity to help leverage what's good for me and be intentional to regain center, instead of using slippage as an excuse to kind of, and this is the dorky word, acquiesce to being mediocre or underselling my potential, right? So, and then my motivation, this is part of my plan slash execution. I will execute this for 60 days. So this is what I will literally do and check the box on for 60 days. And it starts with, I wake up at 5 a.m., 5:15, I do this, 5:25, I do this, until 7 a.m. when my kids get up. So for me, like execution, sometimes it's the plan's really clear and I just have to do it. But there's almost always a reason I'm not already doing it. There's something I have to get over. And a lot of times it's more internal than it is external. There's no reason I couldn't get up at 5 a.m. before. I was getting up at 5:30, but I was running out of time and I wasn't getting done what I needed to. And I felt behind during the day. And so that was during my analysis period of continual improvement. I was like, man, I need to get really specific with myself for a chunk of time on what execution needs to look like for me. Because left to my own devices, when I'm tired in the morning, I'm just not going to do what I need to do.
I just realized something with this plan. I'm just making a connection.
Hurry up. And I have 7 questions I'm going to ask.
Hey, make me another old fashioned while I'm engaging.
Hold on. You're right.
Who's the bartender? There's no bartender when I'm not with you guys in person.
That's Listen, true. If this was a good podcast, we would have a bartender, but sadly.
Oh my gosh. The connection, though, I think, is by having that level of specificity, by having that level of just very, very, very clear and specific instructions for yourself. And I use the word instructions because what I hear you saying without saying it is they're not really goals, they're instructions. It's like at 5 a.m., whether you want to or not, this is your to-do list. You called it a checklist. And I'm wondering, is it because A, it's simple, B, it's clear, but then also it's in the simplicity that actually makes it analyzable and iteratable. I don't know if that's a word, but it is now.
Yeah, no, to your point, right? Like, because it's simple and straightforward, when I ask, did it or did it not work, I can have an answer.
Yeah, yeah.
And if that didn't work, oh, you know what? I think doing that for 20 minutes, that's not enough time. I need more like 30. You know, I'm always bumping up against the edge on that port. I can adjust. And to your point about instructions, I'm just like, I got to get my pride out of the way. If I want to get the things that I really want in life, I think for most of us, life, business, relationships, whatever it is, right? I got to get my pride out of the way. Like, do I really want it or don't I? And if I really want it, then there's no shame in like, I've got to give myself instructions sometimes because I know what I want. And I'm just going to tell myself what to do because I'm not my very best at 5 a.m. So if I want to motivate the 5 a.m. me, like I need to make it simple and clear.
Yeah. There can't be any ambiguity. It has to be like engineered at 5 a.m. or whatever the preferred picture of the future is. It has to be so simple and so clear that you can say with black and white confidence, yes, I did it or no, I didn't. And then analyze and then iterate off of that.
Yeah. Well, and to the point of Rob's question too, it's I can very clearly say I executed or I didn't execute. Because I'm not going to blame lack of performance on a bad plan when only half of those boxes are checked.
One of the things I was going to ask, if you don't mind, would you share some of the things that are on your daily routine checklist? And follow-up question to that, because I have no idea what's on there, but I'm confident there's probably one or two that you could pick out as like, the word that comes to mind is like cornerstones, right? Where like there are certain activities where they're like triggers. Like when you get that one done or you get that one right, it makes everything else in the day easier to do, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, really quickly, I guess it's, again, it's not super complex. It's 5 a.m. I wake up by 5:15. Because I take the dogs out of the room with me. It literally says, dogs are resting. I've taken my athletic greens. I've drank my athletic greens. And I've had a cup of water because I'm dehydrated.
Nice.
And then 5:25, it's 45 minutes a workout, 20 minutes of yoga, 20 minutes of, or 20 minutes of cardio, or a 20-minute walk, depending on the plan I create for myself the night before. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I need a recovery day, so a workout isn't great, you know? And so... And then I record my purpose beneath each of them. The reason I'm doing this is, right, 5:15, the dog's resting, et cetera, the purpose, replenishment, and fuel. 5:25, I do all of these things. The purposes of the workout, et cetera, is I need accomplishment early. I want to establish forward momentum and activity early in my day. If I start accidental, it usually carries throughout my day. If I start intentional, it carries throughout my day. 6:15, water and coffee. 6:20, I review my schedule and my big three for the day, the most important three things that I could get, those big cornerstone kind of activities that I want to make sure I check the box on. And then I visualize my day once I have that listed out and my values present in each of those meetings. So I literally ask the question, I look through the people I'm meeting with and I just go, what would it look like if I showed up as my best self here with that person? What about with that person? What about with that person? And I usually end up making notes next to that appointment. I'm like, oh, I would ask this question. Oh, I would fill in the blank, et cetera, et cetera. That takes me up till 7, but my key to the cornerstone question is it's the workday shutdown. It's my evening ritual. So I review my tasks, et cetera, put my calendar. I identify my big three for the next day. So I'm reviewing my big three in the morning. I identify it the night before when I'm still awake and thinking clearly. So it's just my best day always starts the night before. I recognize for me, one of my analyze and iterate pieces over time was I don't have the energy and the focus the morning of. If I want to have a really great focused day, it starts before I go to bed.
What would you say to people that have kids that have a hard time going to bed on time? Me being one of those.
He'd say, hey, I have kids too.
Right.
Nobody cares. Train harder.
No, I do have kids. Man, when I was in the infant stage, you know, and you have a completely unpredictable sleep schedule and, you know, you're nauseatingly tired. I remember sitting there with my planner, with my earbuds in on noise cancel mode outside of my son's room while he was screaming. And I took the shift on waiting for him to go to bed. Mm-hmm. And I'd put my earbuds on and could barely hear his screaming, but just enough not to make me furious. And, you know, would do my plan for the next morning. And I literally would create two plans. If the night goes well, this is what I'm going to do. If tonight's a total shit show, here's what I'm going to do.
Oh, that's interesting though.
I love it. Yeah.
It's like contingency. It's like you're being real with yourself, mm-hmm. right? It's not, nope, I'm definitely going to execute this, even if I can't go to bed until 4:45 a.m. and I would wake up at 5 and do it anyway. You're saying, well, hold on, time out. Like, we're all human. And so leave a little bit of grace, leave a little bit of space for yourself. But even then is still intentional.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was the key. And the crazy thing is even in the times, like when you have infants, I've never felt so out of control in my whole life. And I would imagine anybody who's had infants can probably relate with that sentiment. But the feeling of being able to control the controllables amidst the chaos is like, it's hard at first, right? Like there's certainly some kind of internal overcome. Like you just want to lay down and die a little bit. but the ability to be able to sit down and even put, I'm going to do these three things in the morning. And if I only have a half an hour to get ready before everything winds up, I'm going to do these three things, if nothing else. And to your point, like at least I'm starting intentionally, which makes a huge difference in a world where I feel like I'm just, when you have an infant, you feel like you're reacting a lot of times.
Yeah. I'm just making the pretty strong correlation, which I've never done before, with that idea of parenting infants. And there might be some listeners that are going, well, I don't have infants, and so I don't have to deal with that. But replace infants, though, with anything.
Replace infants with clients who are calling you with needs at all times of the day. And
yes.
Or friends who want to do social events late at night.
Whatever it is. Like, there's always, I think in the example, therein lies the variable that you can throw into the example. So if it's infants, great. If it's you're in a 1099, like all real estate agents are, position, mm-hmm. and that's highly chaotic and there's a lot that you can't control, like it still stays the same. Your analogy still stays the same. And what I hear you saying and what I've kind of even written down and taken away from it is you can give yourself grace and space, but as soon as you give yourself an excuse to not be intentional, that's kind of when things start to go bad. That's when things start to go come off the rails a little bit and you start to lose your center. You start to lose your trajectory. You start to lose, you know, the whole reason that you started out. And I think it's in that power of even being able to say, I have control over the plan when it becomes uncontrollable. I still have control over the plan. It's pretty powerful.
Well, and that's the great thing about iteration, right? Like, oh, the plan didn't work under these circumstances. Great. Adjust the plan. Just make a plan.
Mm. Yeah. And I'm and guessing
that's what I love about when I was single, to your point, and I was friends wanted to start hanging out at about now, like 9:30 PM. And you're like, okay, I want to, or I don't want to, whatever it is. And like, I'm going to go out, but I made my plan for the morning, even if it's really, really simple. I'm going to do these three things in the morning when I get up. And then what was interesting over time is I started making choices. I'm like, oh, here's what it's like getting up and trying to get to a work day and get the essential things that I need to get done after I've made this kind of an evening choice. So it's not that I never made that evening choice again. I just counted the cost. I knew what it was going to take for me to get up and gear up and be ready to execute at a high level the next day if that's what I wanted to do. But, and that all comes back to what you want. If the thing you want most is to be out with your friends, be social, be at everything, not ever miss a moment that's going to end up on social media. Like if that's the most important thing, then okay, like name it. And if you really want to build a business, then at least you give yourself the opportunity to step back and say, like, how did that work for me?
Yeah. Which is the analyze piece, is asking right. those questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One quick question, then we'll move on to the next point. I am guessing that over time you got better at this. And so like this daily routine checklist that you have now, I look at that and I'm like, oh my gosh, my morning routine is like elementary school and you're in graduate school with your morning routine. And so was it always that way? Or was this something that grew and evolved over time? Because I think it would be a tragedy if somebody was like, oh my gosh, I am so far off from this dude's morning routine and how dialed in he is. Like to close the gap, it's daunting, right? So what did this look like when you first started getting a daily routine checklist in? And what did it look like when you first started building processes for executing at whatever it was you were doing?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because just to be clear for anybody who's very intimidated by the checklist, the point of the checklist was, if you remember when I read the motivations, I was seriously lagging. It felt like I was kind of dying in a pile at the beginning of the year and realized I needed to reset. Mm-hmm. And so I created the checklist literally 4 months ago, 3 months ago, because I needed to, because something needed to reset, because I wasn't getting everything I needed to accidentally, or even just by the level of intentionality that I was using up until that point. I had to increase it. And I said I would do this for 60 days. I knew that that was unsustainable.
Yeah, that's so good. That's so good.
And, and maybe it is sustainable. I don't know, you know, but you know, like moving forward for me, and maybe that's a new level or whatever you're saying, right? Like, but for me, I looked at that and I was like, I can't keep that up.
Yeah, but the beauty of that is you can decide that and when 60 days is up.
Right. But I knew I would need 60 days. That was part of the plan. I'm like, there's no way that this is going to have the impact I need it to unless I do it for at least 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, if I can make a quick plug, I don't know if you've read this book, Landon, but you would love it if you haven't. It's called Train Your Brain for Success by a guy named Roger Sipe. And in it, he talks about a lot of the same things that you're talking about. You maybe just with a little different language, but he talks about when you're setting these intentions, right? Like your daily routine is a great example. You said 60 days. He talks about 90 days or less, because 90 days is about the maximum amount of time that we can focus intensely on one thing without getting bored. Right? Mm. If it goes much beyond 90, we get bored and it's hard to focus for that long. If it's too short, we're probably not giving ourselves enough time to actually form a habit. So probably somewhere in that 21 to 90 day mark is the sweet spot. So not coincidentally, you set yours at 60, because you probably know yourself well enough to know, like, I need to give myself some runway and then really build this as a habit and then go back and look at what's working and what's not working for me.
Yeah. I haven't read the book. I'd love to. I think that sounds right on. Just experientially, I'm sure he has a little science and everything to back it, but experientially, mm-hmm. that seems really true for me. It was 30 days was the minimum. And, you know, when I got over 2 months, I started feeling like I was saying forever. And that didn't feel like something I could commit to.
Right. Right. He's also a huge proponent in that book of a big five or a big six. You have a big three, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, somewhere in there is good. So let's transition, because I want to get into something you touched on right there, which was one of our big things we wanted to get to today, is the importance of knowing what it is you want, right? And so again, I'm going to be the one that asks all the dumb questions. Dave's going to sound really smart on this podcast.
That is my role here.
How do you figure out what it is you want, right? Because none of this plan, execute, analyze, iterate stuff works if you don't first know what you want. So at that very beginning starting point, that foundation of knowing what I want, how do I go about figuring out what it is I really want and dialing that in?
Yeah. Well, I'll say I have a process for this. First of all, I think there is a process that's helpful.
I'm noticing a theme around this word process.
Yeah, it turns out. Just like coming up with it out of the blue hasn't worked out with me, you know, for me very well. So, but I do think there's a real value when you think about like, how do you get anything that you don't already have? And it's rarely because you just come up with it. And so whether it's building a business, whether it's improving a really key relationship, whether it's in work or out of work or whatever it is, I do think there's for me, it's been really good because I like ideas and getting excited about the next idea. For me, it's been kind of counterintuitive, but really helpful to lean into this idea of, oh, if I can have a process and I can trust the process, that's almost like a really healthy discipline for me that's proven out well. So I do look for process because it's a way for me to kind of get out of my own head and ideas and kind of see what's true and respond to it. So it has been good for me. But Michael Hyatt, I really like a lot of the guy's work. I would not recommend getting on his email list, but I guess he won't let you alone.
To this, Michael.
He won't let you alone. But he has this product called the Faux Focus Planner. And when I was starting my business, I was like, oh, okay, that's when I need focus. So, but it really is really helpful. And one of the exercises that he does is he has you set annual goals and then he has you put in the goal details. So that exercise for me was wonderful. So it's literally, here's your goal. And he has you write it out, which a goal is, this is what I want, right? Mm. So it's me saying in this place, in this kind of category in my life, this is what you want. And so, you know, he has a bunch of different categories listed. Is it body? Is it mind? Is it spirit? Is it love? Is it family? Is it community? Is it money, work, or hobbies, right? Like, what's the category of the thing we're talking about? Because a well-rounded life, I mean, because I don't like doing business with people who are all business and they've got nothing else to them, right? Like, if your only goals in life are about building your business, bummer.
Mm. Yeah. Well said.
So, at least I think so. And so,
100% is so.
Yeah. Like, those are boring people and they're usually really self-centered. So they're not great to be around most of the time. And I don't want to be that way. So the goal statement though is, you know, uses that SMART goals framework. He expands it into smarter goals. So he has his own thing. And then he has you list your key motivations. And that was a really helpful exercise for me up front in figuring out what I wanted. Cause your key motivation is, why do I want this thing? Put it in a sentence, write it and write five reasons why you want this. And each time I say why I want this, you ask, and this is something I kind of learned elsewhere, but applied here, but it's, you just ask, okay, well, what would happen or why would I, if I got that, why would that be good for me? If I got that, if I got the thing I said I wanted, then what would be so great about that? And then you fill in kind of the next level. Oh, it's because this would happen. Oh, well, why would I want to get that? I mean, like, for the example, because I know this is getting really kind of heady or ethereal, is I was working with a guy on this and we were trying to figure out what he wanted. And he said, I want to read, what'd he say? I want to read like 7 books this year, which some people might think that's a lot or a little. It doesn't matter, right? For him, it was 7. And I just said, oh, well, why do you want to read 7 books? Because, well, I think it would be really great to be introspective. And I'm like, oh, well, if you were introspective, if you were more introspective, what would that get you? And he goes, well, if I was more introspective, maybe I'd be able to kind of see ahead a little bit further. And I was like, okay, well, if you're able to see ahead a little bit further, why would that benefit you? And he goes, well, if I was able to see ahead a little bit further, then I would be able to think about, and we literally got like 5 or 6 steps down the road. And I was like, okay, look, like, let's just cut it. At the end of the day, you are exhausted from work and you're coming home and you're talking about picking up a book instead of turning on Netflix. Why in the world would you pick up a book instead of turning on Netflix? Like, we pushed and pushed and pushed. And he just goes, I've got a 3-year-old son and I want him to see his daddy reading.
There it is.
Yep.
You know, like, literally it was one of those like tear in the eye kind of moments. And I'm like, and write that down.
Put that on your poster board.
Yeah. You're going to want to tattoo that one. But you know, it's the, I think the problem a lot of times is not that we want too much. It's that we actually don't go far enough with what we want. And I don't think there's very many people in most of our lives who push us and push us and push us to, well, if you got that, why would that matter to you? If you got that, why would, we don't go far enough with what we desire, I think is probably the bigger issue than, oh, I want the moon. It's, well, why does the moon matter to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. You know, that brings up one other thing I wanted to touch on. The last time we were spending time with you, you said something that really stuck with both of us. You said, everything changed for me when I saw accountability as a tool to help me get what I want.
That kind of operative question that you guys hit on seems to be really central in a lot of the conversations I end up having around accountability. And it's just, why is accountability so hard? I think most people who manage other people and people who try to manage themselves, lead themselves, find accountability really tricky from time to time. And I think it's usually for one of kind of a short list of reasons, right? Some kind of branch off of a few. And I think one of them is that if I'm managing somebody, it's oftentimes like when I start holding somebody accountable, what I end up doing is holding up the mirror to myself. And I have to look and say, did I really set expectations all that well in the first place? Which is essentially, did we have a plan? Because if I'm going to hold them accountable, like if I'm analyzing right now, which is kind of where the accountability happens, is in that analysis period. Well, did they execute? Oh, you didn't execute. Oh, but if I'm really honest, the plan that I gave them wasn't that clear in the beginning. And so the lack of execution might have been on me and not them. And so for a lot of us, if we're trying to hold people accountable, so to speak, one of the first and most important things we can do is just, how good am I at setting expectations? And if I'm not great at that, that's the place to start. Don't start with accountability. Start with expectations, because accountability is almost necessarily in that case going to feel like it's about me. It's about my agenda. I'm missing key pieces of data here. People are going to call BS, and rightly so. So I think that's one piece. And then I think the other way that we can skip over accountability a lot of times, or where it gets hard, is we assume too much. We walk in curious. I think accountability, when it's actually about me and me being better, me improving, leveling up, whatever I'm bringing to the table, it walks in curious instead of judgmental, right? So it walks in going, oh, and to what you laid out, Dave, right? It's this, hey, look, I'm literally just curious. This is what you said you wanted, right? Which goes back to the planning piece. If I have no idea what you said you wanted, I skipped a pretty key step there. If we weren't shooting for anything, we're bound not to hit it. So there's nothing to hold somebody accountable to. So here's what you said you wanted, or here's what we said we wanted. Here's why we said it mattered. We were on the same page. It's expectation setting. And then it's just observation. And here's what happened. Here's what did or didn't get executed. Here's what did or didn't, the results we did or didn't get. Help me understand the gap. So I'm not assuming I have all the answers. I'm walking in curious. Ideally, if I'm holding somebody accountable, I'm walking into that conversation. What I really am functionally is somebody who's really committed to just, let's get to the truth. And if the truth is me, if the truth points to me, then like, hey, I missed it here as your supervisor or as your friend who I was going to empower you in one way or the other. I was going to support you. I was going to give you this resource and I didn't do it. And so you couldn't exit, right? Like, great. Like, turn the mirror on me. Let's just find out, because we said this mattered. We said this really mattered that we got here, but we're not there yet. So let's understand it, because we said it mattered, right?
Yeah.
And then I think that, the third piece is just how, if we don't do any of those things, there's just really, it's really hard to get past it. It's probably more about me and getting what I want instead of, in that accountability conversation, ideally, I'm showing up helping them get what they said they wanted.
So the opportunity.
And if we're in a company, we're ideally aligned in that. We figured that out during the expectations conversation. But yeah.
I was going to say, it sounds like number three is like asking the reflective question for anyone on the call who's in leadership, or if you're leading yourself, is this conversation, is this accountability about advancing my agenda, or is it about advancing the goals, the preferred picture of the future, and the visions of the person that I have the privilege of partnering with? And that's right. It's kind of a guttural question. you gotta be pretty honest with yourself about that.
It is a gut check. Yeah. Just to pile on there, right? Like, as a leader, what is success, right? Like, if I'm leading people, my success is their success. So if I think that my success is this thing over there and their success is something different, and I'm trying to weigh whether or not I'm going to fight for their highest possible good or my highest possible good, and somehow those two are at odds and I'm their leader, I'm not doing a great job leading.
Yeah. I read a quote just about a week ago and it's still rattling around in my head. And I'm like, man, it's like a splinter in my brain. The quote is, as a leader, you are what they grow beyond. And I think it was Yoda.
Sounds right.
But that's kind of what you're saying, right? I mean, it's a little maybe too far reaching. Like, we can't define ourselves by other people. There's way more larger implications for how you see and define yourself. But I think that there's some power in that, specifically in the role as a leader, to say, in my role as a leader, I am what they grow beyond. And that would inform a lot of what you're talking about on that third point there. It's huge.
Well, one of the things, Dave, you know, to that is, and you've heard me talk about this metaphor before, but for anybody who hasn't, right, that's, we come back to this metaphor of the Sherpa as kind of almost this ideal picture of a leader, right? And it's, you think about how anybody gets up Mount Everest, except for the one guy who did it without a Sherpa, but it's because you have somebody who's already acclimated to these crazy heights. I mean, this is going up Everest. I mean, it's literally base camp of Everest for people who've never been exposed to this. Base camp of Everest. If you're not acclimated there, your brain will swell and you'll die. They spend 2 weeks. People spend 2 weeks at base camp just to get themselves acclimated enough to begin climbing.
That's a lot of real estate.
It is kind of, right? Like, it's with any new business in that way where it's like, man, this is super intense. And if I don't get myself acclimated to this new normal and I get thrown into the deep end, then, you know, you just assume you suck at real estate and hit the eject handle, right? Like, you just assume you get thrown on a couple of calls with leads and, you know, you just, oh man, that was awful. I don't even recognize the person I was on that phone call. I hate this. This must not be for me, right? Like, it takes an acclimation period just to be able to take the first few steps. Yeah. But for leaders, I want somebody who's been there and they've done that. They're acclimated. They understand that pressure. That pressure is a Tuesday to them. Mm-hmm. And I want somebody who's really thinking about, like Sherpas do, they go ahead of you and they actually prepare the path. They think specifically about what's the next step you need to level up to get to that next level of acclimation. I'm going to go there. They would literally like dig giant ladders into the ice and things so people could cross, you know, these unbelievable little chasms in the ice without dying. And the crazy thing is they don't keep track of how many times they've climbed Everest. You ask a Sherpa how many times they've gotten to the top, how many times they've won, so to speak, themselves. They don't know the number. Mm. The only thing they keep track of is how many people they've gotten to the top.
Such a good analogy. Such a good picture.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah, man, this is so good because we're talking about, you know, if we can learn this process of continual improvement and we can do it well ourselves, then we can teach it to other people. And if we can teach it to other people and help them get what they want, then we're able to continue expanding our success, our impact. And the greatest happiness and fulfillment is found in what we're doing for others, not, you know, what we accomplish ourselves. So maybe a good thing to bring it home is, you know, we've talked about this four-step framework, the plan, execute, analyze, iterate. We've talked about this process for figuring out what we want or helping other people figure out what they want. Bring us home talking about the core process, which is also a huge part of that.
Oh, yeah. I use the core process really is, I use it honestly in almost every conversation now, but the way it kind of applies to this continual growth, I think about it really proactively in the planning phase, but for our purposes, it's probably best or most helpful to think about it in that analyze phase or kind of as an after action review. Mm-hmm. For me, it's the tool that I go to say, I am absolutely insistent that at the end of this week, I am going to learn from it. Like, God forbid I jumped on this many calls with this many prospects, spent this much company resource, lost this much sleep, and spent this much time, right? Like, I mean, all the things that you do in the middle of a week so that I wouldn't learn from all those experiences proactively and then put something in practice where I was going to do something just incrementally better the next week or incrementally more intentional the next week. Because, you know, you just only get so much time. And so I just get excited about, okay, is there a tool that I can lever here? And that's what it ends up being for me. So it literally starts with call it. So core, C-O-R-E. So call it, own it, respond, and execute. So the call it piece is data. It's just the literally what happened, right? So say I was trying to learn from leads, right? I just got put on leads. How many calls would most of your people who are just getting put on leads, like how many might they go through in their first week or two?
In their first two rotations they do every other week, they'll go through 10 leads typically.
10 leads within 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So I've got 10 calls, and then you guys have, you know, some kind of a rating system for, okay, how did that go? So they're like, hey, these were, and I might create my own rating system just to understand it, right? Is these people were highly responsive. We have a follow-up. These people were highly responsive or medium responsive, but they had a follow-up. I would create my own rating system just because I want to make sure I'm learning from each of these. So what's the most helpful way for me to evaluate whether or not I was responded to, whether I was really engaged, and then the result from each of these calls? And so what happened and how I was responded to and what was the result? That would just be call it. I had 10 calls, and this is how all 10 of them rated on my little scale that I made for myself. And then own it. Why do I think that happened? Own it. So call it is the what, own it is the why. And it's just me getting really intense about doing root cause analysis instead of settling for band-aid fixes and really high surface level answers. I want to be somebody who understands, because people who understand can develop a good response, and a response is version two of that plan. And so, you know, if I'm really honest, I was kind of, you know, the own it piece, I was kind of anxious. And I came into the call with that. I trailed at the end of my sentence. When I listened back on that call, because hopefully you're recording them so you can hear yourself, because hearing yourself is the most brutal / helpful thing you can do.
Totally. Except for this podcast. I should listen to it all the time.
Yeah. Oh, man. Laying in bed, I'm putting this podcast
on. When you and Rob are talking, I fast forwarded.
Yeah. Back to me again. But I would listen to yourself. The crazy thing is, you'll find there's these times where you're going, why does it sound like I'm asking a question, but I'm making a statement? Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going up at the end of every sentence. Oh my gosh, I had no idea I squeak. I had no idea when I'm on the phone, I use that many verbal fillers. I had no idea. And it comes across, I'm asking the question, what's it like to be on the other side of me? And by the way, that's the question that really is functional self-awareness. So not the kind of self-awareness that's you going and finding yourself by staring at your belly button in the woods, right? Like, it's the kind of self-awareness that translates to business outcomes. It's what's it like if you're somebody taking a lead call on the other side of me? What's it like listening to me? Is that a good experience?
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's an okay experience until this point. Just be honest with yourself, because then you can benefit. Have somebody else listen to it with you and give your own responses and reactions at the end. What was that like? Why do you think this is how I think, you know, these are the results and this was the kind of traction I got? Why do you think it was? Get really, really curious about the why. Because a lot of times there's a lot of little nuances, especially when it comes to communication. And then, so therefore, I'm going to have my response. I'm going to have this plan. I'm going to say this sentence. Because if I say this sentence with this way, with this kind of intent and impact, it sets me up. It puts me on a trajectory where I speak with a lot more confidence if I can get through this point in the call. And if I know how I'm going to intro the call, if I know the key couple of questions I'm going to ask and how I'm going to say them, and I've rehearsed that, and I know how I'm going to finish the call, the one or two questions or sentences I'm going to use to finish the call, everything else seems to fill itself in, right? Like, what are those for you, right? So that's the response. And then the execute is, when's the call that I'm going to practice this for the first time on? That's the, you know, on my morning checklist, my response, I did core process on that. My response was, crap, call it. I'm not in a great place. Here's what I'm feeling. Here's what I'm experiencing at the beginning of the year. Own it. It makes sense why I'm here, but I don't want to be here for very long. And I have a choice. I can either go this way or this way right now. That's the own it. What is this? Why does this matter? What does this mean? That's kind of the own it piece. The response was, man, I need to get really specific about what I'm going to do. And I think it needs to be for 60 days. So if you're doing leads, it might be, I'm going to do this. I probably won't know whether or not this is really helpful for maybe the next 5 calls. I need to do 5 calls and see if this really improves things. If I see a trend in a positive direction, then I'll know whether or not I'm making the right adjustments. And then execute is tell somebody, right? I'm going to do this for 5 calls. And then I want to have a conversation talking about what I learned from those 5 calls. That might be a simple lead way to break down the core process. Yeah.
The core process is just another, it's like you said, it's a tool in your tool belt that I'm guessing you're probably anticipating using that into your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, it's just a constant process, right? It's not like it's an elementary tool. It's neither an elementary tool nor an advanced tool. It's just a tool in the same way that if you were building a doghouse, you'd need a hammer. And if you were building a multi-million dollar house, you'd still need that hammer. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Well, and I think to your point, the more complex the situation, the more quickly I find myself needing to pull it out. And so I hope I'm more practiced with the tool when that situation comes around.
There you go.
Yeah, more complex. That makes sense.
I'm like, oh, I need the tool. I'm practicing it in some of these work scenarios where it's just me. And so I can fumble around with it a little more and make some adjustments. And then something happens with my wife or my family or, I mean, something that feels like it's very in the moment. Yeah. I want to be able to go there fast in my head just to get clarity, not because I'm going to spell it out for them because nobody would like that, right? But hey, sweetie, Andy, think we need to just pump the brakes real quick and let's put this on the whiteboard. Like that doesn't go well.
I actually tried that one time, Landon. And as you know, with my wife, no.
Yeah. Megan thought, bad idea. But it is, like even just in my own head, it just helps me get clarity going, oh, what would it sound like if I was actually curious? Here's what happened. Don't jump too fast to judgment. Everybody hates that. You hate being judged. Don't do that to her, you know?
That's good.
Well, I know we're bumping up against an hour. We could easily go for another hour and probably even another one after that. But I think in the interest of keeping the punch on this episode, such a good place to pause and go, wow, hopefully there's a lot of listeners who have a lot of notes. I've got 3 pages of my own. And this is probably the 20th time I've heard you talk about some of these things. And every single time, I still have 3 or 4 pages. And so,
same.
Yeah, if you're listening, I hope you got something from plan, execute, analyze, and iterate, and the importance of that and some of the key questions that came out of that. And then also just maybe some guidance and opening your mind a little bit to exploring what it is that you really do want and how to figure that out and some of those multi-layer questions, digging deeper and getting into the actual motivations of what it is that you want, whatever that looks like. And then that third thing that we just hit on was the core process, the call it, own it, respond to it, and then execute. I mean, those 3 tools, that's like a year's worth of practice, introspection, work, collaboration. I'm guessing that it's probably, you'd probably recommend best done in community and not necessarily just alone. And so if you're listening to this and you're at Thrive, you've got a family for sure that would love to engage in this process and some of these tools. If you're not at Thrive, seek that out because that's a really big deal to do this together with people that you trust and that trust you in relationship moving forward, all for the benefit of both of people that are doing it and the people that have already been doing it as kind of leaders and mentors. So, man, I can't thank you enough for being here.
Landon, this is going to make people so much more money if they actually use it. Where should they send the royalty checks to?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's so good.
It is funny, right? Like focus matters. I was thinking because you and I, like we've all, the 3 of us, we've talked about boiling it down and maybe in an effort to just reinforce or boil down. I think the, what do you want? Why do you want it? What would that do for you? So if you got what you just said you wanted, what would that do for you? Ask that 3 to 5 times and just see where that gets you. So when it comes to the what do you want piece, go down that road, just see where that gets you. And if I really want something, just be obsessed about learning from every rep. And you get really, really focused on learning from every rep. That's where core process and the improvement cycle and all the rest come into play. Yeah. So, and I think, man, getting to share what you really want with somebody and getting to get really, really intense about like, I just want to learn from every single thing I'm doing because I care so much about getting that thing I said I want. It gets fun. I mean, it like feels obsessive at times, but then it's fun again. And you think it's going to take a lot of energy and then it ends up giving you energy. Right. And so I just get excited about your team getting to do this alongside of each other, getting to share that, you know, their process and work through this process and hone in on it with the 2 of you guys. Like I just, you know, obviously I've been involved with Thrive at different levels for a long time. I get excited about seeing your people here and now get to, you know, just get to step in to this for themselves and get to take Thrive to wherever it needs to go next together.
We got 3 rapid fire questions for you before we wrap up. You ready?
Bring it.
Favorite superhero.
Oh my gosh. Oh, favorite superhero.
Dave Ness.
Oh, it's so hard. Man, my favorite superhero. I'm literally split. I cannot determine this. It is Captain America or Tony Stark?
Good. Okay, yeah. Captain America was the right answer. Good job. Favorite food?
Bourbon.
I mean, Mexican food. It's Mexican food, just as a genre. Yeah.
Yep. All right, last but not least, favorite music genre?
Ooh. I mean, it's a very specific kind of country music. We'll say country, but if you're thinking like Rascal Flatts, that is not what I'm talking about.
What would you call? Are we talking like Texas country?
Yeah, like Texas country. I mean, it's like Turnpike Troubadours. It's like Josh Abbott band.
Randy Rogers?
Yes, there we go. Some Pat Green thrown in there. Yeah, stuff like that.
Nice. See, this is why we get along so well. All right, brother. Thank you so much for being on here. As always, like Dave said, it is a genuine pleasure. It never feels like enough time. We're always left wanting more. And that's why you're so awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys. Always, always a pleasure. I love our time together.
Right on, man. Have a great night.
Cheers, brother.
All right, you too.